Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This episode is brought to you by a mattress with a name, and that name is Douglas. More than 200,000 Canadians trust their Douglas mattress. They trust it so much they sleep on it. I have tried a Douglas mattress, and it's incredibly comfortable. It's a high-quality product at a very affordable price. Comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
Hey, there are a lot of podcasts that do not ask you for money. This is not one of those podcasts. But then again, I'm not trying to sell you like bodybuilding supplements. I don't have a mass audience of people listening to me talk with my best friend about our sex lives or annotate old sitcoms that we were in. This is a Canadian show. This is how we're going to do it. A combination of advertising and listener support. You can get ad-free versions of this podcast when you go to canadalandshow.com/join. Or if you're listening on a smartphone, just click the link in your show notes. And it's $5 a month for ad-free Canada Land. Please do it.
It's like night and day compared to Canada and the U.S. I'm proud to be Canadian. I'm proud to be the Premier of Ontario. And I know Canadians just won't tolerate it. Again, good luck to them. And hopefully they can straighten out their problems. And thank God that we're different than the United States. And we don't have the systemic, deep roots they have had for years. The difference between the U.S. and Canada, we get along. Believe me, it's night and day. I'm proud to be Canadian.
So that's what the Premier of Ontario, Doug Ford, had to say in the wake of protests against racism and police brutality that spread from the United States into Canada after the killing of George Floyd by Minneapolis police officers. Lucky for us, we don't have the deep roots of systemic racism baked into our systems, our institutions, our history. That's an American thing, and good luck to them with that. Sucks to be them, I guess. Look, it's easy to take shots at the ignorance of Doug Ford. And I do believe that he was honestly ignorant. But how many Canadians could tell you that the militarization of police is not some recent phenomenon here in Canada, but something foundational to Canadian policing? The RCMP began 6 years after Confederation, when John A. Macdonald established the paramilitary Northwest Mounted Rifles to clear the prairies for settlement and to protect the Hudson's Bay Company from, quote, Indian massacres. Macdonald changed the name from rifles to police in order to hide the military nature of the Mounties from the Americans. He didn't want them to know that he was building up troops along the border. As for the racism part, the long and violent history of the RCMP's relationship with Indigenous people is well documented. From helping Ottawa secure treaties, to spreading firewater alcohol across the plains, to forcibly breaking up families, the Mounties were, and remain, the point of physical contact between the federal government and hundreds of Indigenous communities. They certainly are a system, and it is just not really a matter of debate that they are a foundationally racist one. But again, I do think Doug Ford was being honest when he seemed to not know any of that. I mean, even the current commissioner of the RCMP doesn't seem to know that. Here is how Commissioner Brenda Luckey answered when asked if her own organization is systemically racist.
I can't say for sure. You know, we put in policies and procedures so to make sure we don't have systemic racism. And I think for many of our members are doing great work every single day. There are members, of course, who are not following our core values.
She can't say for sure. Ignoring Indigenous people is easy in Canada. That's what reserves are for. That's what Mounties are for. But some evidence simply won't be ignored when the timing's right. In recent weeks, as Canadian media asked that same question we always ask when big news breaks in the U.S., what's the Canadian angle? The internet provided. First, a video of an RCMP truck in Nunavut purposely accelerating into an intoxicated Inuk man. Then, RCMP dash cam footage from Fort McMurray of a Mountie suddenly jump tackling a man, punching him in the head and putting him into a chokehold. That man was Athabasca Chipewyan Chief Alan Adam. Something clicked, and I think it was the videos that did it. Not the killings, mind you, and there have been killings, but we don't have viral videos of those. The videos we do have fit into a story that the media was already telling about American police and protests. They provided that Canadian angle.
Systemic racism is an issue right across the country, in all our institutions, including in all our police forces, including in the RCMP. That's what systemic racism is.
Both Doug Ford and Brenda Luckey got the memo. They've walked back their earlier statements. Maybe systemic racism does, in fact, exist in Canada. Maybe it has deep historical roots here, too. So that's where the rhetorical ball has bounced. Everybody has adopted the language. They've accepted it. But what does it mean? What has it always meant? What do the police mean to you if you happen to be an Indigenous person? Today, I'm going to welcome two new contributors to Canada Land. Carl Dockstadter, Oneida of the Thames, Bear Clan, lives in Niagara Falls. Sean Vanderklis, Anishinaabe of Curve Lake First Nation, Turtle Clan, lives in St. Catharines. Together, they co-host the radio show and podcast, One Dish, One Mic, which you should go subscribe to. And they are each recipients of the 2020 CJF-CBC Indigenous Journalism Fellowship. Wait for them. This episode is brought to you by Maya Hoke, Gabe Klassen, Chris Oliveros, Lindsay Short, Jen Nealens, Blair McKenzie, Brianna Major, and Lee Blanding.
My name is Lee Blanding. I'm a historian and I teach history and Canadian studies courses at the college level in Vancouver. I started listening to Canada Land several years ago and I took full advantage of the fact that it's free. But now I'm a supporter because I really like that Canada Land does really good media criticism. So I like that I get to see how the soup gets made. I also really have liked that Canada Land has branched out into straight ahead journalism. I really like that you took on the Irving family, which nobody seems willing to do.
This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter like seclusion and, you know, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get like anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding like the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. Canadians know the name George Floyd. They know the name Ahmaud Arbery. Canadians know Trayvon Martin. There are some other names that I don't think are as widely known in Canada, even though they are names of people who lived here. Can you share with me some of these names?
People need to know what happened to Dale Culver. People need to know what happened to Chantel Moore. People need to know the name Deborah Lee Christjohn in Oneida. They should know the name Aisha Hudson, Jason Collins, Stuart Kevin Andrews, Abraham Nadanin, Regis Korchinski Paquette, Everett Patrick, and Rodney Levi. These are all people that had families. These are all people that are survived by loved ones. And these are all people who on their last day, the last person they saw were police officers.
These are people who were killed by police officers or in incidents and altercations with police officers. Is that accurate?
Yeah, every single one of those cases involved police interaction.
As two Indigenous men, what does policing mean to you? Sean?
It's a system of control, and how I evaluate these systems in my life is I base it on what I have to tell my children. When we think about the police and we think about the RCMP, we don't see them as a good guy. And this is not me trying to politicize this or polarize this. We don't. Like, fundamentally, cowboys and Indians, RCMP was designed to control Indigenous people. So when I talk to my kids, I have to tell them how to behave. And unfortunately, that's a lived reality that I have and my children have.
Carl, is that consistent with your experience?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's going all the way back to London and what happened when I was 15, when Dudley George was killed through really no fault of the Indigenous people and definitely not through Dudley George's fault, was that at our local Friendship Center, I'm a proud Friendship Center baby, so they called the youth into the Namarin Friendship Center, and everybody's emotions were high. Everybody was hyper aware of what had happened. Again, London has a heavy police presence, and what they decided to do was to instruct us as Indigenous youth on how to conduct ourselves safely if we were pulled over by the police. And it never hit me at the time that's fundamentally backwards. They were telling the Indigenous youth how to react to the police, not telling the police how to handle Indigenous youth, not telling them how to be sensitive to the colonial history or to the fact that we were going to be sensitive because a member of their parallel forces, the OPP, had killed an Indigenous person. It was so fundamentally completely backwards. I'll never forget that. It really frustrates me to no end, and it just feels brutally unfair that this 15-year-old kid first has to read one day in the headlines that the police killed an Indigenous man, and then the very next day that I'm taken in and said that you have to watch yourself around these people, because if you don't do everything perfectly, if you're not the kind of person that they want you to be, then you're going to be the one that's in trouble. It's awful.
Yeah, I mean, living in an urban community that is fundamentally older in age, fundamentally whiter in color, you stick out as an Indigenous person. You do. And because you stick out, you have to face and have to have these hard conversations, and you have to deal with the blatant racism that does exist. I like, to be completely honest, to be open, I had a run-in with the law, and the run-in that happened was that my friends got into a fight, two non-Indigenous people, two visibly white people, got into a fight, and we saw somebody get involved. I went to break it up. Turns out it's the cops. What happens is I and my cousin, who are both visibly Indigenous, are arrested and charged with assaulting a peace officer. And the non-Indigenous people, the people who are clearly, were let go scot-free. So a fight happens. We try to break it up. We get arrested, and we're charged with assaulting a police officer. I'm pretty good at defending myself. I'm pretty good at talking my way out of situations. I'm pretty comfortable in uncomfortable situations. But my experience with the justice system, my experience with the police, is that I do not belong at all. And it fundamentally breaks you down. It really does. Because you know what I would like to do is I'd like to wake up the next day, and I'd like for my son, for myself, to think that, you know what, the cops are good people. That the police force is good people, that I want to believe in this utopian society, that it's just because I'm Indigenous, we can't. Because of the lived experiences that I have, that the lived experiences of my friends and everybody else within our community, it prevents us from having that same experience.
It's difficult because I don't know what age I realize that other people don't see the police the same way that I see police. I never saw them as the good guys. One of my formative experiences was OCA. So at 10 years of age, when you're just sort of figuring out life, what I see is splashed across the headlines is that the Siletta de Quebec are going in and they're invading sovereign territory in Katnawage. And so for me, that was formative. And I really took that to heart, seeing the police go in, seeing the military go in afterwards, seeing all of the conflict and the violence and the mixed messaging. And then a few years after having Ipperwash and then living in London with a heavy police presence, living here in Niagara with a heavy police presence, I've never seen police as the good guys. And I didn't realize until recently in life that a lot of people see things differently, but I don't have positive experiences to speak to like a lot of other people.
Can you remind everybody what happened at Ipperwash?
In 1995, the Kettle and Stony Point First Nations were trying to take back territory that was supposed to be temporarily borrowed by the Canadian government when OPP forces moved in. Dudley George had a stick in his hand, but was completely unarmed. Two police officers engaged with Dudley George, and he was shot in the process. This was shortly after the Premier of Ontario had said, quote, "Get those fucking Indians out of the park," end quote, to senior leaderships, including OPP officials. And that loss of life just sent a ripple all across Canada and definitely through London, where I lived, which is only an hour away and has a heavy population of people from Kettle and Stony Point First Nation.
Well, that quote from Mike Harris, though there's lots of reason to believe he did say it, there are eight people who swear he didn't say it. What we do know for sure, because video later emerged, is how the police present at Ipperwash, some of whom were undercover as protesters. We do know what they had to say about the protesters and some of their sentiments because there's video evidence.
Is there still a lot of press down there?
No, there's no one down there. This dripping fat fuck Indian.
Camera's rolling.
Yeah.
We had this plan, you know. We thought if we could get five or six cases of Labatt's 50, we could bait them. Then we'd have this big net at a pit. Creative thinking. Works in the south with watermelon.
They sound like some bad cops. I think a lot of people are realizing, perhaps for the first time, that that's what policing is for Black people, for Indigenous people. But as you say, this is old news for you.
And that's what's tough, because a lot of people will say they're bad apples, or they're, you know, maybe that's an outstanding, or, you know, hey, Jesse, you guys pulled up the worst possible clip. But when I think back to my childhood and when I think up until now, the only interactions I've had with police have been fundamentally negative. So it's hard for me to believe this narrative that it's only a few bad apples, when that's all I've seen from police is when I'm alone at nighttime, they're looking at me. When I was a kid walking through the streets of London knowing that that cop has an eye on me, and then seeing in the headlines that, that Dudley George lost his life because it just wasn't valuable at that time in that place to those police officers for them to take the right precautions so that he could live. It's devastating, and it's formed my entire view of the police, and it's not positive.
You know, we could talk, and we should talk, and we should return to this idea of why it is that the Canadian population can somehow understand these issues as they occur to Black people in America in a way that feels a bit more immediate or real or something to take to the streets about, more so than when it's happening to Indigenous people right here. But let's reserve that for a moment, because that is how this is back in the conversation. And it was in the wake of the protests around the world that we then started to talk about Regis, and that we then started to talk about Chantel Moore, and that we then saw video footage. And I think that just in terms of people's, like, how they view the news, watching horrible video clips of Black people being killed by the police, and then watching the video of Athabasca Chipewyan First Nation Chief Alan Adam in Fort McMurray just being horrifically assaulted by the RCMP, and making that connection has been made. And if anything is possible ever, it would be now. But I wonder if that's just my perspective on this. Is that even true? Like, has the violence increased, or did we just start paying attention?
It seems to me that I've been watching my entire life that we're noticed more and that we're seen more. And because we spend more time with the police, that the violence has always been there. One of the issues here is actually that the police don't release these statistics. Like, there's not race-based data is not collected, and it's not processed the same way that it's been processed in the United States in terms of information. So when we ask ourselves how many Indigenous people have died during police interactions over a period of time, it's been left exclusively to the media to collect that information. The information has shown, though, that the proportion of Indigenous people and Black people that die after police interactions is higher. The scrutiny that we have right now, though, I think that, yeah, I think everything's under the microscope, but we're just seeing a scrape of a pretty average block of time, unfortunately.
I mean, I guess this is the moment to seize if you're trying to push things forward on this. And I know that's how you went into this interview that you two conducted for us. Who is Senator Lillian Dick?
Senator Lillian Dick is a member of the Cree Gordon First Nation in Saskatchewan and a first generation Chinese Canadian. She's the first female First Nation senator and a Canadian-born senator of Chinese descent. When Senator Dick called for the commissioner who was hired on the basis that she was going to fix the RCMP, when Senator Dick said that she needed to be fired, Sean and I had to talk to her. We had to know what kind of a place she was coming from and if she was upset as we were about all of the things that are happening between police and members of our community right now.
The goal of our interview with Senator Lillian Dick was to see where her views are. Do they reflect the grassroots movement? Do they reflect what is happening in society right now? And we had the opportunity to interview her. We had the opportunity to ask her these tough questions. And I would encourage you to listen to this interview.
So we're going into multiple generations. I don't even know how far back policing has been broken for.
Yes.
Can the institution of police itself be fixed?
Well, that's a really good question. I don't know if I have a good answer. Honestly, we have to start somewhere, because I certainly do think we do need some kind of police force for protection. But the one that we have now clearly has gone, I think, too far in terms of the way it handles Indigenous people and racialized Canadians. I mean, we saw the video of Chief Adam. That really, I think, was a landmark video. Frankly, I couldn't watch the whole thing because it's too traumatic. I can't watch that kind of violence. But it definitely showed that there are flaws. And then for the RCMP then initially to come back, their initial position was, well, it meets the standards, the level of force that the police can apply. Well, then the general public, like people like myself, say, well, if that's the kind of force they can apply, something's seriously wrong. They must be applying this force to everybody they encounter. Nobody wants to be treated that way. And certainly in Chief Adams' case, I think likely applied it at a greater strength than they would have for another person who was not an Indigenous person. And we worry. You know, women worry because we are underprotected and over-victimized. Men worry the same way. And, you know, it's really sad that Indigenous men, if you look at the statistics,
they've been collecting statistics on Indigenous identity and homicides for the last 4 or 5 years. And Indigenous men are more likely to be killed across Canada at five times the rate. And for women, it's 7 times the rate. We know that in Saskatchewan and in Manitoba, when with police encounters, it's more likely to be an Indigenous man, that's an Indigenous person that's killed. So, I mean, this is just unacceptable. This is supposed to be Canada, which we see as this land of diversity and everybody's equal. We all get the, you know, the same kind of treat. Nobody's discriminated against. It's been 5 years since we had the Truth and Reconciliation Report. It's been a year since the National Inquiry Report on Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women came out. We've had report after report after report stating there's problems. So something has to start happening now.
So let's say that Justin Trudeau listens to your recommendation. He makes a recommendation to the minister, and they then remove commissioner from her position. Is that the goal? Is that the starting point? Is that where do you see this going after that?
I would be surprised if they remove her, even though I think they should. We need a leader at the top of the RCMP who is capable of shifting it from the positions that it is in now. If you look at Saskatoon, where we had the Starlight tours way back, and where Indigenous men were being dropped outside of the city and left to freeze to death, it took a very strong new police chief to come and essentially make the police change. And that's the kind of leadership I think we need at the federal level. We need someone who has the abilities to make that huge change. And waffling about whether or not there is systemic racism, not saying you don't know what it is and you don't know for sure if there are racists in the police force and maybe it's just unconscious bias, is not the kind of position that's going to lead to the big changes that we need to see in the RCMP.
The word on the street right now is defund, though. They're talking about defund the police. They're talking about abolishing the police. They're talking about an institution that inside and out has killed more people over the COVID-19 yeah. crisis than COVID-19 itself. So, I mean, is there time left for reform, or is it time to talk about reallocating resources and maybe even looking to a future where we don't need police in our communities anymore?
Well, certainly I think the funding issue can be looked at, and people are saying, and I agree, that funding should go towards mental health services, social services. And in many of the instances, certainly the last two cases in New Brunswick, where there were Indigenous people under mental health distress, if they had had different resources available, they could have sent a mental health worker, a social worker, and maybe a female police officer as backup. Because I've actually seen that kind of action in my own experience. I've seen it happen where you call in a mobile crisis unit with a team, and the police officer's there, not as the first person, but is there to, in case the situation gets out of hand. And so that way you get a much greater likelihood that the person's actually going to get help and taken to the hospital if necessary, but certainly not attacked, not physically beaten, or at worst shot and killed.
So, but I mean, I grew up in a community where the police weren't our friends. I mean, I grew up in Julian Fantino's London, and it was right around the time that Dudley George died in Ipperwash, and mm-hmm. there were a lot of other things that were happening. All of the Indigenous kids in my community, we did not trust the police. Now, here I am 20 plus years later and nothing's changed. Do you think that the broken trust between Indigenous people and the police force can ever be restored?
You know, it can only be restored once the relationship changes and you see a demonstration of goodwill on their part. Again, speaking to my experience here in Saskatoon, I think that relationship has improved a lot, and it took a lot of hard effort on the behalf of the city chief of police and on the members. So they had a special unit that they had specific officers who were meeting with members of the community. They have an advisory committee. They speak to the elders. There's much more community involvement. Still, there, it's not perfect. Still, there's an increase, you know, increased carding of Indigenous people. Not everything's fixed, but it's getting better. It's not going to happen overnight, but we have to start now with something, you know, something meaningful, something to, you know, say we are going to go on this path, and we can't turn back now. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
So guys, listening to that, it's, the rhetoric was, I mean, I might have been talking to either of you in terms of how appalled the senator seemed and how forcefully she argued for a need for change. She's on board for a reallocation of funds. She's on board to even have a replacement RCMP commissioner. But when it comes down to the idea that you presented to her that maybe these communities don't need police officers and there's another way of handling incidents, what did you sense was her kind of policy position on that? Because that is increasingly an idea that is being debated and discussed.
As soon as I hung up the phone with Senator Dick, that was my first thought too, was like, wow, was she powerful talking about what she had seen and what she was hearing from community and demanding change. And she has been a tireless advocate for our people and has demanded that things be better. But then, yeah, when it came to policy, I was like, it just seems like there's an appetite for a paradigm shift. I want to respect the fact that the senator's looking at this from the long game, and she's been at this a lot longer than I've even been looking at this issue. But did I really hear a call for substantive change, like the kind of fundamental change that could really change the nature of the relationship between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people? And if I'm being perfectly honest, I just didn't hear it in her answers. She's still, I think, fundamentally believes in the system. And I think that a lot of the people I talk to are fundamentally skeptical of the system.
Sean, what did you think?
I think one of the things that we need to consider is that Indigenous people have never been part of the system. And I really appreciate the senator's point of view that we need to consider change. But like replacing the commissioner with another commissioner, okay, that makes sense, I guess. But is that really dealing with the issue at hand? Like, are we just putting a Band-Aid on a disease? Because in my opinion, that's fundamentally what it is that Indigenous people do not belong within the system that is Canada. We don't belong in democracy. We do not belong within policing. We don't belong in health. And you can replace all the commissioners you want. Again, I don't think that is going to have a fundamental change. From my point of view, I think she may have been a little out of touch with our local community and the people that are on the ground who are dealing with this.
I mean, by definition, a senator, a member of our government, tries to work within the system. And we know that the only reason why there's an appetite for this paradigm shift is because of pressure that is occurring from outside of the system, that the system is being inflicted upon the system. You know, placing this conversation in the wider context, everyone's talking about, you know, this sort of this range of like, okay, defund the police. It's got a lot of support right now. They get a lot of money and crime's been going down. What's up with that? And then we see these videos and you say, certainly somebody else could be going in for mental health checks. And just before we sat down to talk today, another video emerged of an Asian woman being just horribly beaten as she was a wellness check from an RCMP officer, and she's being dragged through a hallway and a foot on her head. So there's a lot of mainstream support with that kind of video evidence for these cops with their guns, everything looks like a nail to a hammer, somebody else should be going in. And then you get to this point where different communities are talking about abolishing policing, and that's the radical idea that the mainstream, I think, is still, you know, not ready for. And, you know, I'll tell you the truth. I still ask those questions of like, well, yeah, but what do you do when someone breaks into your house? And what about when you need policing? Without getting into my perspective on this, I want to talk about the RCMP, not policing writ large, but the RCMP and its history when it comes to Indigenous people. How far back is Canada ready to go? How far back do you two go when you are looking at the RCMP and asking this crucial question, can it be somehow evolved and adapted to meet the needs of these communities? Or is the RCMP something that is so associated with everything that we're trying to move past that we need to think of a future beyond the RCMP? We need to abolish the RCMP.
Regular listeners to One Dish, One Mic know that Sean and I are not big fans of Sir John A. Macdonald, but the roots of the RCMP actually go all the way back to him. So I was studying up for this interview, and it turns out that Sir John A. Macdonald was looking for an idea about how to expand Canada in a westward direction, and they were just purchasing the territory from the Hudson's Bay Company so that they could expand the territory of Canada. And John A. Macdonald, a historian, actually pointed out, looked at the Royal Irish Constabulary, a paramilitary police force that the British created to keep the Irish under control. And so he modeled the Northwestern police force after that paramilitary force, and that was a tool that was used to fight the Métis, to oppress Indigenous people, to play an active role in removing children from their homes and taking them to residential school. The RCMP often accompanied children being scooped from their homes for the 60s scoop, and then fast forwarding to today, all of the things. And unfortunately, there's so much stuff that you can rip from the headlines about how the RCMP are still treating Indigenous people. So when people talk about the roots and the trunk of the police force, I mean, it was founded on racist ideologies. And can it be salvaged? I'm not sure, but I think people should really study up on the history. And it's been bad from day one for Indigenous people.
I mean, we have heard of the game Cowboys and Indians, and that is literally what's happening. We have the cowboys who are the good guys, we have the Indians who are the bad guys, and fundamentally, that is the relationship we have. This isn't a John Wayne movie. This isn't the 1950s of the portrayal of the Wild West. The RCMP does what it has been designed to do, and that is to protect the interests of the citizens of Canada and again control the Indigenous people of this country.
What would it look like, a Canada post RCMP? We're talking about communities that are troubled, where people are vulnerable, where there is violence. We're talking about communities that need some kind of help at times. But we're also talking about, like, a lot of places that don't even have a provincial police force, where the point of contact with the federal government of Canada, with the Crown, is your local RCMP officer who has, I think, power of life or death over you.
So I think that the RCMP and policing on reserves fundamentally, again, is another system of control. Like, let's talk about properly funding the reserves systems that exist. Let's talk about providing funding to healthcare, to education, to nutrition, right? COVID-19 has come into Canada, and should this hit a reserve, this is going to be absolutely devastating to our people. It's good that the government has given us money to deal with this, but if we don't have the infrastructure to accomplish or to execute the plans that they put in place, then what good does it actually serve? So when we talk about defunding the RCMP or abolishing the police force in general, what we're talking about is providing the services, the social services that are needed for Indigenous people to properly exist within the world and within the context that they've been forced to live in.
Carl, do you think that there is a way forth past policing?
I think there has to be a way past policing. I think the policing is part of a larger process that really leads to a cycle of involvement in the criminal justice system. I was a court worker for a few years for my community, so I had a front row seat to see that once you get a toehold into the criminal justice system, that it's the type of thing that just becomes this recurring involvement again and again and again. Once you're involved in the police system, once you're involved in the court system, once you're involved in the prison system, I think that it just is this self-propagating cycle of dysfunction that is so far detached from what we want in our communities. So absolutely, I want to see a post RCMP world. I want to see Indigenous oversight of any and all policing agencies to start with. Like, if you were saying what could be done tomorrow to make a fundamental change, I would say turn the keys over to the individual Indigenous communities, because there's hundreds of them. There's going to be hundreds of different solutions. But the faster we look at turning the keys to the cop cars, as it were, over to the actual drivers in the community, the faster I think that we're going to see some positive change. Right now, it's an entity that has a culture that's completely foreign to Indigenous ways of being. It's always been completely foreign to Indigenous ways of being, and I don't think that it's ever going to properly adjust in any useful way to the communities.
The counter argument, I can imagine, and I've heard it. You can, you know, read all kinds of Facebook groups and rural Saskatchewan forums where they say that they are not adequately policed. They have the rights that anybody in Canada has to protect their property. Rural policing is a big problem. Who's gonna look after them? And then there's other people saying, well, what about all of the domestic abuse that happens? Can we really allow these communities to police themselves? Is that really a way forward? Let's get real here. How do you respond to that kind of perspective on this?
You're racist. I mean, these are all fundamental racist views, that Indigenous people are inferior and that we're not capable of maintaining the level of civility that Canada is capable of doing. And when we talk about the level of civility that Canada is capable of doing, let's remind ourselves of the 8 to 9 people that we just said who died at the hands of the police. Right? Like that is fundamentally a racist point of view, that Indigenous people aren't good enough. We don't have the capability. We don't have the know-how. We don't have the civility to maintain this level of structure. Well, and to that, what I fundamentally say is that since Canada has become a country in 1867, we have been maintaining our ways and our customs since time immemorial. Right? The only hiccup in our civilizations is the country of Canada.
Well, I can't think of a moment where it seemed more possible to affect some kind of big shift than right now.
Do you think we'll still be talking about this 6 months from now, Jesse? Or is it just when these things pop up in the headline that these conversations will happen?
We'll be talking about it the next time it pops up in the headline. I mean, you know, we're always looking for ways to talk about it. And... you know, there's something exciting about what's going on right now, as kind of awful as it is, because there is a sense like anything's possible and things are on the table that were never on the table before. So we're sort of doubling and tripling down on it and doing episode after episode, looking at things from just slightly different perspectives, because it does slip away really quickly. You know, we do have the attention span of a gnat, and, you know, and as much as Canada Land is about commenting on the media, we kind of are dragged along to whatever the media looks at next. But I don't know. This wasn't a flash in the pan. This wasn't a, you know, it was a culmination of months and years, decades. So I don't know. Does that make any sense? Yes and no. Like something's different. Don't you think so?
It's hard to say. I mean, I kind of thought that with COVID, like it seemed like basic income guarantees and like all these sort of things that seemed like they were really pie in the sky were gonna become tangible. And now that things are reopening, it's like, wait a minute, this looks a lot like what it looked like before. Only the people at the bottom of the financial order have sort of paid for everything and are worse off, but everybody else is okay. So I'm afraid that with all this police action, that it might be a similar thing. Like, yeah, we're talking about defunding the police, but they're like on a community level, the things that we're seeing here in Niagara Falls is there are a lot of pushback. The police force have some very adamant and influential defenders. And this is an institution that's not going away without one hell of a fight. And I think that if this truly became an argument that was going to affect the core of what policing is, I think that we're just at the beginning of the tools in the toolkit of the police defense machine that is really just started to get going.
I mean, I agree. And I would extend that to the whole thing. Like everybody's kind of just hoping that things are going to go back to normal across the board. And if they can, then people will be relieved and they'll forget everything they were thinking about right now. So, you know, I'm not advocating one way or the other, but for people who are like trying to push, it seems like you know, the only course of action is don't let it get back to normal. And it's not going to be normal because, like, as you say, somebody's footing the bill for all this stuff. You know, somebody's been out there more exposed to the pandemic. Someone's been out there doing the work that can't be done over Zoom. So, you know, I guess that's the question is, will people on the front lines, people on the ground, allow things to normalize, you know, and protest movements do have this kind of exhaustion point they reach. And so far, like the media got exhausted before the protesters have, right? I mean, let me ask you that. I mean, you're Indigenous journalists and, you know, you've made it your business to talk about this stuff every week. What do you think is the best way to seize this moment?
It is tough because I do think that we run into a bit of an echo chamber where people are sort of reinforcing the ideas that we have. I agree with your sort of original take on this, that it feels different this time. It feels like we're finally asking these questions. I think that sooner or later, police are so expensive, and we may even already be at that point, that people who don't ideologically believe that the just thing to do is to relook at police, that people are going to go, well, wait a minute, you know, somewhere between $2 to $4 of every $10 that I pay in taxes is going to pay for my police force, depending on which community you live in. And is that really how that money needs to be spent? So it could be the time for a shift. These police reports that they've released in our community, like I'm watching the comment section, and it has struck a nerve, and it has awakened a whole new generation of people that are weighing on issues that haven't weighed in before. So I'm glad that I'm in a position where I get to comment on this publicly, because there is a change. And from a storytelling standpoint, it's an exciting change to watch. I think there's going to be neat and new stories that are going to unfold as a result of this.
You know, when we look at the immediacy with which white protesters who are taking to the streets on behalf of fighting anti-Black racism, inspired by, in large part, what happened in America, not what happened here, and we compare and contrast these scenarios, I mean, there's a lot that's different. But there's a difference in the way that different communities have resisted. And, you know, one big difference, of course, I think, is the difference between things happening in an urban center and a rural center. And whereas when protests happen and movements happen in a part of the country that everything about Canada has kind of organized to help us ignore and forget, the mainstream response is to authorities, oh, go shut it down. Don't give an inch. Go shut it down. And there's a difference as well in a big protest that can get rowdy in a downtown urban core, and a way that is sort of culturally consistent with some Indigenous communities, where we see healing walks. I feel like one is more politically urgent to affecting change, that when you have an air of mournfulness and solemnity, Canada says, oh, this is an interesting cultural expression, and that's a one-day news story. But when there are angry people on the streets a mile or two away from you, people say, we've got to do something about this. How do you take what I'm saying, I guess, is what I'm asking. And I'm struggling to ask it in a respectful way, because I'm not in a position to tell people how to resist or protest. But I am somebody who kind of looks at how it all plays out and sees the effectiveness of different methodologies. What do you think? Carl, let's start with you.
Well, that's something I watched during Idle No More. And I mean, that was our big community awakening here, where we were initially blocking highways and, I mean, blocking rail lines and affecting change in that way. And there was a shift in the community that we had to do this in such a way so that if our kids were watching us, that they would see that we were working on their behalves with honor. So it is always this great challenge as community members that want to see positive change, that do we block things? Do we shut things down? Does that get more attention? I mean, look at what happened in Tiandanega, right? There, the people in Wet'suwet'en have been quietly protesting for a decade, and they've been right. Like, the Delgamuukw decision could not be more clear that they've been 100% right. But then Tiandanega shuts down a main arterial rail line in Canada, and everybody takes notice. So I'm going to flip this back over to the Canadian public. I mean, they're sort of forcing our hand, that the things that catch the headlines are Oka and Iprawash and Gunnestoden and Tiandanega and all these sorts of things. That's what's really, really tough, is we as Indigenous people are putting into this position where it's like, yeah, we have educated people now. We have this robust Friendship Center movement. We have court workers in the courts. We have Indigenous police. We have all these people that are fighting for positive change using, you know, Indigenous senators like Senator Dick. And yet still, on a wholesale level, the fundamental relationship hasn't shifted anywhere. So are we going to reach a boiling point and a breaking point? I hope it doesn't come to that. But when you start to run out of options, that's when you start to get desperate. And if things don't change soon, then the coming generations, I can't speak for what direction they might have to go in.
When you talk about the possibility of the protest movement getting more drastic, is that going to have to happen to keep people's attention right here?
From my perspective, I think that it has to be that way. We have to look to extreme measures. I think we need to touch on the base of systemic racism, right? Like, it's fantastic that Justin Trudeau takes a knee, and it's fantastic that he verifies that it exists, and it's fantastic that the RCMP commissioner changes her point of view later on. But unless they truly identify that systemic racism exists, and unless they truly believe it, if they do not believe it, then it doesn't matter. The words that come out of their mouth are irrelevant. Only they know if they believe that Canada has a systemic racism issue. And unless they address that, we are not going to be any better off. The people who have been killed by the hands of the police, these aren't new, right? This may be new to Canadian society. This may be new to the mainstream media. But fundamentally, these are things that we've had to deal with since Confederation. We've had these reports, we've had these commissions, we've had these inquiries that Canadians and the governments have put millions upon millions of dollars into, and we haven't seen any real progress. The recent report on Indigenous people incarceration has clearly indicated that Indigenous people are incarcerated at a higher rate than non-Indigenous people. We make up 3-4% of the population, but yet we make up 30%+ of incarcerated individuals. So, I mean, I don't understand what else we can do. I think that we're going to have a reawakening, if you will. And again, I'm a young man. I have young children, and my young children, they're going to stand on my shoulders, and they're going to do the work that Carl and I weren't able to get done. How that looks, I don't know. If it's, again, protesting, if it's demonstration, sure. If it's taking over the system by participation and democracy, sure. I don't know, but I know that we're going to be better off once our younger generation comes in. They're going to stand on our shoulders. They're going to do the work that we were unable to do.
That is your Canada Land. Come on, give us $5 a month. We'll give you an ad-free version of it, plus other stuff. Click on the show notes or go to canadalandshow.com/join. You can email me at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read everything you send. We're on Twitter @CanadaLand. Our website is canadalandshow.com, where you can listen to and subscribe to Oppo, which has been terrific. You should check that show out. Kasia Mihailovich is our senior producer. Our managing editor is Andrea Schmidt. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. This episode is brought to you by Douglas. If you know of a better Canadian mattress at a better price point, well, you're just a liar, and you're lying to me right now. No, Douglas is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. I know this mattress. I trust this mattress. Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand. To claim this offer, that's douglas.ca/CanadaLand.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.